Welcome to the Sunbury Press Book Show on the BookSpeak Network. Sunbury Press publishes print, electronic, and audiobooks under a variety of imprints and categories, available worldwide wherever books are sold. And now your host, the founder and CEO of Sunbury Press, Lawrence Knorr.
We're at the Christian Baker Farm near historic Boiling Springs, Pennsylvania. My guest today is author Stephen Greer Williams. He's the author of the Prose Edda series, the third book being Scotty and the Geats. An earl with godly ambitions, a Viking warrior, a scheme decades in the making. Mine, Hrothgar, the Earl of Lyre, has amassed so much power in his great hall that he's now staked his claim as ruler of Midgard, but only under the use of violence. Children have been separated from their parents, entire communities have been destroyed, and hopelessness grips the weak and strong alike. A Viking warrior has recently defeated a Jotun, and now joins the wise, bodiless Mimir in search of his body. Scotty's victory has made her a legendary warrior, but this fame has come with a price, the attention of powerful and cunning adversaries. A message from the Earl draws Scotty into a decades-long conspiracy involving the Aesir. She is a fast, strong, and skilled warrior with years of combat experience, but if she has any hope of taking down the Earl and his followers, she's going to have to accept that victory could depend on other people. Stephen Greer Williams is an avid traveler, amateur cook, and fantasy author. Scotty, Thera, and Scotty and the Geats are the first three books in the Prose Edda series. A graduate from Northwestern University, Stephen lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, with his wife Danielle. You can learn more about Stephen at stephengreerwilliams.com. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, I got through that introduction with all the words. Thank you for helping me figure that out before we started.
So, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, this is exciting. Now we're at the third book. Hopefully we're seeing some momentum build. What do you think? Is that happening?
I think so. I hear regularly from folks that have read the first two books that they're really enjoying the series and that they're really engaged in the world that's being crafted. And that means, a lot to me.
So how much of this connects to Norse history, the way it's recorded historically, and how much liberty have you taken with it?
So I think it's a pretty decent blend of me taking some creative liberties and me staying true to the Norse myths that were first recorded by an Icelandic historian about 1,000 years ago. There's gaps that can be filled in within the myths. There's debate around, what is meant by certain stories. And so I sort of leverage that dialogue, that discourse around, what is the true mythology and what can be sort of played with to come up with my own stories. So I want to say it's a pretty even mix. Like, there's other stories that are famous, like Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings that have taken inspiration from Norse mythology, but it was just inspiration, like they interpreted it their own way. My stories exist within the realm of Norse mythology, but I try and fill in the gaps that are untold.
So back with the mythology, were these the kinds of stories that were just told in person, like maybe sung to some kind of music, yes, like by a bard?
Yep, they were told, they were, what's the word? They were passed down, generation after generation. But then it was Snorri Sturluson, which I love saying his name, who was the first to write the myths down. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting, too, about Norse mythology, or what is interesting about Norse mythology, is that at the time that it was written down, Christianity had started making its way into that region of the world. And so there's a lot of scholarly debate around what is truly originating with the Scandinavian folks and what was influenced by Christianization into mythology.
Interesting.
And it's really interesting, yeah, because a lot of mythologies originated pre-Christianity, so you can see how there's not that influence there, but it's very pervasive in Norse mythology.
Very interesting. All right, so tell us about Skadi, this main character.
So Skadi is a Viking. She is a really strong-willed and physically strong individual who initially only really sought to protect her son from the cruel world that is Midgard. You know, Midgard is not kind to people who show any weakness. And, you know, for humans especially, where they're physically quite inferior to some of the other creatures, her son was, Midgard can be a tough place. So Skadi's focus was on making sure that her son was okay, especially after having witnessed her husband and the boy's father be killed while they were on the road. So so that was her focus in the first story, and her growth was around, you know, recognizing that if she wants to protect him, she also should consider protecting others, because she can do that. And if she's able to do that, she should probably do that. And then the second story focuses on a different character, Teeta, entirely. But then the third book, Skadi and the Geats, continues to see Skadi explore this growth that she started in the first story. She's now moved on from protecting just her son and the folks in the community that is called Fensalir, and moved on to Lyre, where there's more nefarious activities happening, and the plot's a little more political. You know, there's definitely some the villain, for example, is a human, as opposed to in the first book where the villain is a monster. And I think that adds a certain level of intrigue that might not have been in the first story. And we're seeing how Skadi deals with all of that.
Mm-hmm. So Skadi is a Viking mama bear, huh?
Yes, you could say that.
Does she wear a horned helmet?
No.
No, I'm just kidding. This isn't like Hagar the Horrible's wife. Okay. Sorry, I know this is much more serious. And for some reason, I'm in a silly mood. It could have been the Monty Python that Tori and I were going back and forth with before we started. No. Yeah. No. No, that's fascinating. So what's a geat?
So here's the rub. I don't want to spoil too much.
Okay.
So the Geats are from the Geatsland, and they are from, well, you know what? I'm not going to even go into it. Like, I'm going to let folks read the book. I don't want to spoil too much for it, but it does play into some old stories from history that folks would be or should be pretty familiar with.
So if you want to know the Geats, you got to geat the book. On that note, we're going to take our first break. I'm talking to Stephen Williams. We'll be right back.
Sunbury Press Books is your home for the writings of independent authors. Loch Ness Books is our young adult imprint, including Joe Harvey's Summer Changes Everything, Deanne Baker's The Boaters Club, and Arcane Maurer's Forbidden Powers series. Find these and other books by diverse authors at sunburypress.com.
I'm back with Stephen Greer Williams, the author of Skadi and the Geats. And how's the series been received so far? And I about it, yes. But you know, you're touching on some mythology here, and you're treading into some territory, and you know, you got to kind of stay in some regards. You know, you can take some liberties, as you said, but there's other people that want you to stay true to some of the familiar aspects of the myth. So. Maybe talk a little bit about that, your experiences.
Yeah, no, you're spot on there. And for most folks that have read it and either, you know, left me a review on Goodreads or on Amazon or have reached out directly, you know, I think they recognize that as an author, I'm afforded some creative liberties, and, you know, but there is, or should be at least, a desire to try and stay true to some aspects of the mythology that is well received. And I think people have responded kindly to the creative, the fact that I've stayed pretty truthful to the established lore. So,
yeah.
You know, for example, you know, Valkyries make appearances in all of my stories, and the Valkyries that I have used in the stories are true to their established mythology and the uniqueness of their character in the mythology. For example, Eir, who is a Valkyrie in Norse mythology, is a healer, and she's a healer in the stories. So, you know, again, like I try my best to leverage the true mythology and weave it into a story that makes sense for me, and that it is the tale that I'm trying to tell. So, It's been pretty well received. I had one gentleman actually reach out and say that he is absolutely, like, absolutely adores the stories.
Revenue. Oh, that's wonderful.
That felt better than any revenue that was generated from the selling of the story. So,
Yeah. You know, in the early going here, before it really hits the big time, those little anecdotes are priceless. Yeah. So, you know, for those that are listening and learning about you the first time, I know we had you on a prior show and we talked about this a bit, but we'll go over this territory again. Stephen, you're from Harrisburg. Mm-hmm. How on earth did you get into Norse mythology? You're not from Reykjavik or Oslo or, you know, a place like that. So maybe explain a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. So in 2016, some friends of ours had expressed that they were going – no, actually, it goes back a step before that. 2015, our friends had expressed that they were going to visit Iceland and asked if my wife and I would join them on that trip, and we had no reason not to. And so in 2016, we went out to Iceland. It was actually in February, so it was cold, which, interestingly enough, is still a very beautiful time to visit that country. And while we were out there, we visited saga museums. And we also, well, my wife and I got engaged in Iceland, in Vik, the Black Sand Beaches in
nice.
Vik, part of Iceland. And so that was our first real foray into that culture and the mythology that is born out of that culture. And then the following year, having not found a place that we wanted to get married in Harrisburg that sort of met our aesthetic and our finances, you know, those are two key elements there. We decided to have a destination wedding back in Iceland with just our immediate family and some really close friends. And again, second time around, we did the same thing. We visited some of those museums and really just started to fall in love with the mythology and culture and that whole region of the world. So when I realized I had a story that I wanted to tell, which at the core of the first book is around advocacy and being like being an advocate for your community and fighting, you know, the good fight.
Right.
I was thinking, how would I tell that story in a way that was interesting and not preachy? And so I chose the lens of Norse mythology because that was something that I'd already had a love for and an interest in. And the first book was born out of that, and I've just been building on it ever since. So I continued to do my research. You know, before we jumped on this podcast, we were talking about a gentleman named Jackson Crawford, who is an American that lives out in the Midwest that is one of the world's leading experts on Norse mythology. So, so that's how I arrived at, this space. But I will say, once this series concludes, there's other mythologies that I seek to explore.
Mm.
And without giving away too much of a spoiler, I start to inject the idea into these stories that there's other mythologies that exist within the universe that's established in this book or the series. So, more to come.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. And it works.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, the question, you know, if I'm the IRS, have you gone back and revised your tax returns to make this expenses for research for your...
I know. Right?
It's like, man, if I had only thought of that then.
I know. Like,
carry forward those losses till you make a lot of money. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah, no... Interesting that you mentioned Dr. Crawford. How did you get connected with him? And is that something that he read the books, or did you reach out to him, or how'd that go?
So he's just a known personality, actually. Mm-hmm. He's written some books on Norse mythology. He has a YouTube series. I think he works at a university. Off the top of my head, I don't recall which university. But he's just a known figure in this area. So I don't know him personally. I've just researched him and looked up stuff that he's done. And as a part of my collective research, so I don't lean on him solely, but he's just one of those figures out there that's known.
So your trips to Iceland, what's different about Iceland that you bring into your working? There's something about the environment, the landscape that you're able to imagine better because you've been there?
Yeah, no. So that's a good question because I remember prior to having gone to Iceland, my wife and I, we travel a lot. It was, or my brother and I, depending on who had availability and their PTO. So we would do a lot of traveling. But Iceland was the first place that we had visited that felt truly remote. And I mean that in the best possible way. It felt untouched by humankind, especially once you got outside of Reykjavik. You know, you would be on these roads for hours at a time and hardly see another person driving past. The landscape was very primordial. It was beautiful. It was, there had recently been a volcanic eruption, and so you could see some of the remains of the volcanic rock that had landed on the ground, you know, and it was just really cool and beautiful seeing that sort of environment and just untouched. So, and it was what I'd imagine the world to look like long, long ago, more so than other parts, even their own country. So I take that into consideration when I'm working on my stories for this to be a true statement. But I'm told that Icelandic as a language is the most reflective of what Old Norse Viking speakers would have sounded like. So, okay, you know, I really lean into Iceland as a source of inspiration for these stories. And if one were to envision the map of Midgard, that is where most of the stories take place, I'm using Iceland as a strong guiding hand in terms of where things might be on that map. So, you know, and people have done this before. I think I heard someone say Westeros is just England flipped on its head. Iceland, Westeros is from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Midgard would be essentially Iceland, you know, just with a few minor changes made.
Okay. Very interesting. We're talking to Stephen Greer Williams. We'll be right back.
Sunbury Press Books brings you the work of independent authors. If fiction, whether historical, murder mysteries, or spy thrillers take your fancy, check out Milford House Press. Releases of interest include The Class Assignment is Murder by Carolyn Kleinman, Dead Man Who Walks Away, Parts 1 and 2 by Herbert Dean Ely, or The Immigrant's Wife by J.B. Brooks. Explore by clicking on the Milford House tab at sunburypress.com.
I'm back with Stephen Greer Williams, the author of Scotty and the Geats. So, Steve, you did hint that you were working on a fourth book. Do you have a title for that?
So, I don't have one firmed up, but I do have a working title, and it's Loki Saga. So, okay, the first three books allude to Loki sort of having some, you know, behind-the-scenes activity going on. Loki, as some folks are probably aware, is very popular because of the Marvel stuff, but Loki in Norse mythology is the trickster god, mm-hmm, and he is a Jotnar from Jotunheim. He's not an Aesir god like Thor, or he is, or Odin. So his origin is pretty obscure and different, even by the standards set within Norse mythology itself. And so, but Loki is known to be a antagonist, so to speak, of the gods. Sometimes he's a friend, sometimes he's an antagonist. But in my stories, he has been, you know, pulling some levers behind the scenes, moving the world slowly towards Ragnarok. And so in the fourth book, you're really going to see Loki come to the forefront and no longer be a like a shadow figure.
Now, do you see that as the end of the Prosetta series, or do you see it continuing in some way? I know you talked about other mythologies. Just curious if it's like an addendum to the series, included in the series, a parallel series.
I can dig into that. So I anticipate there to be six books in the Prosetta series. Okay. So book four, Loki Saga, is the lead up to Fimbulwinter, which is the three consecutive winters prior to Ragnarok. And so that would be book five, that time frame there. And then book six would be Ragnarok, and the story would be concluded. So, you know, the first three books are leading up. Book four is when things start really getting hairy with the gods. Book five and six are, you're in the throes of it, and then the conclusion. And so that's the planned series. For the other mythologies, you know, the interesting thing about Norse mythology is that all nine realms, so Jotunheim, Midgard, Asgard, like the others, they all exist on the world tree, Yggdrasil. And so early on, this is, I think of maybe the first book or the second book, I was thinking about this expanded universe that I would be writing in. And I thought it might be interesting if, since Yggdrasil is a tree and trees exist in forests, you know, what if these other mythologies are all on trees, quote unquote, but in this forest? And if you could travel between those, then you could experience other mythologies. So, mm-hmm, Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, Celtic mythology, Japanese mythology. Like, these all exist, you know, in this forest. And so I really start to lean in and highlight some of that in book four, which is what I'm working on now. But it's been hinted at in the second book, I should say. Scotty, I don't think I hinted at it at all. Theater, I hinted at it a little bit. The third book, I hinted at it a little bit more. The fourth one, you know, I want to give away too many spoilers, but folks will be interested and intrigued if that's something that strikes their fancy.
Yeah. Make sure you write off all this travel for this other research to all these other mythologies.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I'm looking for a reason to go to Egypt.
There you go. Well, that's really cool to hear that you're right in the middle of this series and that there's a lot ahead for you. So looking forward for that.
Yeah, no, thank you. Norse mythology has a natural conclusion. It is Ragnarok. You know, I don't want to, I think, go too much further beyond that without having, like, a really strong story to tell. Like, the one thing that I don't want to do is artificially inflate this series. You know, I want to tell a complete story that with fully fleshed out characters and then let that be it, you know. If there's more story to tell, sure, but I don't want to artificially create. So I won't be splitting the final book into two parts. You know, like, I won't be doing any of that. I'm going to tell a complete story and, you know, let that exist out there.
You're not going to leave us with any cliffhangers, huh? Okay. All right.
You're funny you say that, because sometimes I can't stand a cliffhanger, you know, because I feel like even if the story has multiple parts to it, I want to experience the totality of an individual story within a book. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to be left wanting for more and then have no clue when that more is going to come. I don't know. I don't want to do that to my readers, because I hate when people do it to me.
Well, back in the day when the bards sang these tales, if they didn't end them in a good way and the people didn't raise their mugs or glasses or, you know, tankards and, you know, shouted in celebration, they'd chase the guy out. They might even run a sword through him. So you want to finish these well.
Yep.
All right. So what are you working on as far as promoting the book? You have anything coming up?
Yeah. So May 24th, 2024, I will be at the Midtown Scholar with Patty Kim, State Rep Patty Kim, who's a local here in Harrisburg. And we'll be having a back and forth dialogue about the creative process, a little bit of community engagement. You know, that was the source of inspiration for the first story. And we're just going to be kind of having a conversation like we are here, like we are now, but at the Midtown Scholar on the main stage. You know, this is really quite an honor. I remember with the first book, you know, I was sort of hounding the Midtown Scholar about just carrying it. And now with book three, they're having me do a discussion with the community around, you know, writing and that just is quite, it's really, like, it almost brings a tear to my eye, because it's such an honor. Mm-hmm. But it was their idea. Like, I had come to them and said, you know, can we do a launch event here? And they said, we're going to do you one better. We're going to have you up here on the stage talking to people. And so we've been moving towards that. You know, there was a slow rollout in the beginning, letting folks know quietly, but just recently, in the past few weeks, we've started really promoting it heavily on social, and letting folks know and putting out email blasts and doing everything we can to drum up attention and get butts in seats.
Wow, that should be a great time.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're going to have a good bit of wine, too, on the front end. So
good.
Maybe good. Some meat as well.
Well, I remember the first book, and I remember our conversation in the truck that day as we delivered your copies, which was an amazing serendipitous experience. I show up to give you your books, and you hop in the truck, and we take them around. And I think that was a pleasant surprise to your fans and family who received those books that day. But I remember talking about the Midtown Scholar and how you lived in the dang neighborhood right down the street, and they wouldn't really talk to you at that point.
Oh, yeah, I know.
No.
I think it's one of those things where, you know, if you demonstrate persistence, like, I've told people time and time again that my one true skill is not writing or anything, really. It's persistence. You know, I will stay at something until it happens, and I won't give up. You know, I might pivot, I might change course a little bit, but my one thing is that I don't give up. And I think, you know, the Midtown Scholar finally recognized that they weren't going to get rid of me. So,
yeah. Well, I think they'll benefit from it, too. And when they see the crew that comes out that night and the enthusiasm, it's going to be quite an experience for them as well.
Oh, hey, absolutely.
In our last minute here, any words of advice? I know you talk about persistence, but other authors who are trying to break through, here's a great example. You know, you couldn't get in the bookstore and now you are. Anything else that you might offer to up-and-comers?
Yeah, I would probably say stay true to your core values. Apple was very insistent upon being traditionally published. I wanted to do that from day one, and I didn't, you know, kind of stray from that desire, and that was just because that was something that was of significant value to me. And that doesn't have to be the case for every person, but I think leaning into your core values when it comes to writing will keep you chugging along. It can be sometimes a bit of a discouraging space, but if you know what is pushing you forward, you're gonna stay with it and enjoy it. And I'm so glad that I did, because this has been quite the experience.
Yeah, I will definitely second that. Stephen, it's been great having you on.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Sunbury Press Book Show on the BookSpeak Network. Check out our website at www.sunburypress.com for our latest releases. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter to receive special offers and discounts.